reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Mark. Jesus and his disciples came to the other side of the sea, to the territory of the Gerasenes. When he got out of the boat, at once a man from the tombs who had an unclean spirit met him. The man had been dwelling among the tombs, and no one could restrain him any longer, even with a chain. In fact, he had frequently been bound with shackles and chains, but the chains had been pulled apart by him and the shackles smashed, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the hillsides, he was always crying out and bruising himself with stones. Catching sight of Jesus from a distance, he ran up and prostrated himself before him, crying out in a loud voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, don't torment me." Jesus had been saying to him, "Unclean spirit, come out of the man." Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" He replied, "Legion is my name, for there are many of us." And he pleaded earnestly with him not to drive them away from that territory. Now, a large herd of swine was feeding there on a hillside, and they pleaded with him, "Send us into the swine, let us enter them." And he let them, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the swine. The herd of about 2,000 rushed down a steep bank into the sea, where they were drowned. The swineherds ran away and reported the incident in the town and throughout the countryside. And people came out to see what had happened. And as they approached Jesus, they caught sight of the man who had been possessed by Legion, sitting there, clothed and in his right mind. And they were seized with fear. Those who witnessed the incident explained to them what had happened to the possessed man and the swine. Then they began to beg him to leave their district. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed pleaded to remain with him. But Jesus would not permit him, but told him instead, "Go home to your family and announce to them all that the Lord in his mercy has done for you." Then the man went off and began to proclaim in the Decapolis what Jesus had done for him, and all were amazed. The Gospel of the Lord. Got a call from a reporter about 2 weeks ago wanting to do a story on exorcisms. Unfortunately, there aren't all that many people, including priests, whom a reporter can interview, which is one of the reasons why, for example, the U.S. bishops are doing courses to train priests in the art of exorcism, because that more or less was pushed to the side for 40 years. One of the questions the journalist asked is, "Well, what about all those Catholics who don't really believe in exorcisms? Think that basically we're just dealing with psychological illnesses. Are they wrong?" And my immediate response to the reporter is, they don't know the gospel. Any Christian who wants to pretend as if the devil doesn't exist and demonic possessions don't exist don't know the gospel. Said many of them will just think that when Jesus cured people, he was just curing people of epilepsy. Because in the ancient world, they thought that if you had epilepsy, for example, you were possessed by a demon. Or if you had some other illness, they'd come up with an explanation that maybe a demon was afflicting you. And they think that all Jesus was doing was healing the person of an illness like epilepsy. Which for the secularists who want to deny the devil is an interesting technique, because they're admitting that Jesus can do miracles of healing people from epilepsy. But at a deeper level, how can you explain what happened in the gospel? Do epileptics run up to Jesus, fall prostrate and say, "Don't torment me, Son of God," before he had realized that he was the Son of God? Do epileptics show superhuman strength? After the healing of an epileptic and the verbal command for whatever was in him to invade swine, do whole herds of pigs run over a cliff and drown? No. We can go through so many of the other exorcisms that Jesus himself did. And then he sent out his apostles with the power to expel demons. This is something that we need to grasp. The devil's real. And we need to reject him, his evil works, and his empty promises. Last night, because I knew many people would be asking about it, I went to see the movie called The Rite, which is about exorcisms and loosely follows the training that a priest in California had gotten, but they changed so many of the details that it wasn't recognizable in terms of that. But in the movie, the deacon, transitional deacon, who had been sent over to Rome to receive this special training, at first didn't really believe it, thought that people would be having psychological difficulties, and in some cases those who think that they're possessed just do have psychological illnesses. But one of the protagonists in the movie, a priest who was an exorcist over in Italy, said, you know, the fact that you don't want to believe in the devil won't make him go away. Doesn't mean he doesn't exist, even if you don't want to believe he exists. And that's the situation, I think, for many Christians. They think that if they don't believe in the devil, then they won't be tempted by the devil, then the devil won't seek to do them harm. But it's not that case. Jesus has come into the world to cast out the power of the devil from us, but we need to give him permission. I want to focus a little bit on this first reading because it's really key leading into tomorrow. These 11th and 12th chapters of the letter to the Hebrews are among the most inspiring in sacred scripture. The 11th is all what people were able to do by faith. A few days ago we had what Abraham was able to do by faith. But then it starts going through an incredible list, and always by faith he did this, by faith she did that, by faith he did this. And today we get a whole list. Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, the prophets. He describes all that they did, and all of those people just named did what they did against unbelievable odds. Gideon with just 300 winning against an army of 10,000. David killing 10,000, killing the Philistine. Barak, who at the word of a prophetess went out against a much more powerful army with faith in what God was saying through the prophetess. And he won. Going on and describes all that they suffered, all that they had triumphed. And tomorrow at the beginning of the chapter 12 in our first reading, we're going to get the dramatic therefore. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us with faith and courage go on to victory. All of these show us what faith can do against all odds. But at the end of this reading, it says, yet all of these, though approved because of their faith, did not receive what had been promised. Didn't receive the great promise that the Messiah was coming. The great gift of salvation, the triumph over the worst enemy of all. It wasn't the Philistines or the Canaanites. It wasn't Antiochus Epiphanes. It was the devil. They did not receive what had been promised. God had foreseen better for us, so that without us they shouldn't be made perfect. They weren't going to receive the prize until we were ready. And then Christ came. And after Christ, those who have truly shared the prize on earth and in heaven are the saints. And today we celebrate one of the greatest of all, St. John Bosco. What was one of the problems in today's gospel? The people in the Decapolis in Gerasene cared more about their swine than they did about a man possessed by the devil. Think about that for a second. They cared more about their stuff, even pigs, than they did about a man who was beating himself up with stones, totally ostracized from culture. And when Jesus cured the man and they lost their pigs, They were filled not with gratitude for the healing of a brother. They were filled with fear, and they asked him to leave. They didn't want to have anything to do with a person expelling demons who at the same time was bad for business. And in Turin, in the 1800s, there were a lot of kids who were orphaned, kids who were out causing trouble. We don't have to look far to see what kids can do when they don't have dads growing up. We've got gangs throughout the city of New Bedford. We had another kid murdered execution style just last week. And John Bosco went, even when he was a young boy, to try to bring them to the gospel. And he was opposed because so many of the businessmen in Turin didn't want these kids really to be helped. They just wanted them put away, kept away as far as possible. When John Bosco was trying to help them and he needed money in order to build a chapel and then more or less one of the ancient types of trade schools to give them something productive to do as tailors, for example, or as bookbinders, so many of them shut their doors in his face because they didn't really love others. They didn't really care. But like the great heroes in today's first reading, John Bosco didn't care. Even when everybody said he couldn't do it, he knew that little Giovanni Melchior Bosco plus God was enough to conquer the world. And he did, over and over again. Toward the end of his life, the Holy Father, Pope Pius IX, was trying to raise money for a church dedicated to the Sacred Heart in Rome. It was after lots of battles in Italy and the reunification of Italy. Anti-clericalism was very high. It was a tough time to raise money. So many people had been impoverished by the war. And Pope Pius IX was pretty devastated that he wasn't going to be able to fulfill his papacy by doing this great monument to the merciful and human love of Jesus. So one of his advisors said, "You haven't tried everything yet." "What haven't we tried?" the Holy Father asked. He said, "Ask John Bosco to raise the money for you." So asked John Bosco, and he had so many other things going on, but as the advisor had said to the Pope, "Your wish would be enough as a direct command for him." So John Bosco spent the last couple of years of his life raising money for this Basilica di Sacro Cuore in Rome. He went through Italy, went through France. There, everybody greeted him because he was already known to be a saint during his lifetime, as well as a miracle worker. And with faith in God and God's working in people, he raised in very short time what even the Pope wasn't able to raise. It was because of his faith that that was pulled off, and God responded and moved people who caught faith contagiously just by being in his presence. This is who we're supposed to be. John Bosco was born of a mother, just like we were born of a mother. He was baptized as a little baby. He grew up in an incredibly poor home, had nothing. When he went away to seminary, they had to take up a collection. The priest gave him his hat. The mayor gave him his cassock. Somebody else gave him a pair of shoes. He had literally nothing going for him. The only time that he learned how to read was when he was apprenticed to a little priest in his village to help out around the rectory. The priest taught him how to read. Little did he know that St. John Bosco would become a great writer and a speaker later. He had nothing. And because of God and his faith in the Lord, became something truly great. The end of today's gospel, this man asked to follow Jesus up close. And Jesus said, "No, go home to your family and proclaim all that the Lord in his mercy has done for you." John Bosco wanted to be a great missionary, but another great saint, whose face is in my confessional, St. Joseph Cafasso, one of the great confessors and a seminary professor at the time, said, "No, you stay and you help these boys in your city. This is your vocation. Go proclaim the word of God to them." And he did. And in fulfilling that mission, He's now got Salesians, the order he founded, all across the world. Through his intercession, we beg the Lord that for the grace that we might respond to the infinite treasures of help he gives us every time we come to Mass. One Holy Communion is enough to make us a great saint if we receive the Lord fully. And the Lord wants us to receive him with faith. We're surrounded by such a great crowd of witnesses, all those in the Old Testament who are heroic in their love of God, and all the saints who have gone before us. Let us ask them to intercede for us, that we might run the race the way they have, and truly give God glory, proclaiming to the whole world what the Lord in his goodness has done for us.